This poor guy now gets locked up 5 years in jail. Then he has 3 years supervision and a $250,000 fine on top of this. Like, come on, man. This is complete bullshit.
Anytime someone announces that they're going to adopt a Bitcoin treasury, I think that's awesome. Where I tend to have an issue is when they start shilling fiat products by virtue of having their Bitcoin treasury, that I'm like, you missed it.
The reality is nobody knows what's going on. And if they tell you they know what's going on, they're lying to you. Or they're just like sniffing way too much of their own hopium.
All we need is enough people that don't fall into this stupidity to hold Bitcoin in self-custody. That's how you fight. That's how you win. You don't give in to these stupid narratives.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Tony as usual, and Sophie is back. Sophie, thank you for joining. Up first, guys, we've got some bad news, unfortunately. So yesterday, I think it was yesterday, Mixing Service Samurai co-founder was sentenced to 5 years in prison for this money laundering case. So Keon Rodriguez was sentenced to 5 years, and I think I saw a $250,000 fine as well. I think most of Bitcoin Twitter is hopefully mourning. Obviously, they're clamping down on privacy. We haven't seen the aggressive push for pardons that we saw like with folks like Ross, but I think someone equally deserving, if not more so, for the work that they have done in the space. Tony, I'm going to let you take this one first and give your reaction.
This is disgusting, man. This is incredibly infuriating to read, considering these guys, like this guy didn't do anything wrong. I mean, they're trying to make an example out of him. And, you know, the final verdict in this just illustrates, you know, flat out, at least to me, that you have no judicial system in the United States. This is corruption in the purest sense of its form. And, you know, they found, you know, some scapegoat to try to, you know, instill fear into this market. And this 5-year sentence is after he pled guilty. I mean, I'm assuming he did that because he figured, you know, things will go a little bit more lenient. But can you imagine if he didn't plead guilty, what possible concoction they would have come up with now? This is like, everybody should be up in arms in this. This sets a very, very bad precedent for anything going forward. I mean, so much for we're going to make, you know, Bitcoin, America, the Bitcoin capital of the world, freedom, blah, blah, all that, you know, pretty talk. But follow the actions. Look what they actually do. Where's all this marketing when you have, you know, verdicts like this coming out? It's absolutely appalling. And there's no pushback. That's what's even more infuriating. Like, I mean, oh yeah, everybody complains about this. It sucks and all that. And then they go on, you know, about their day as if nothing happened. And this poor guy now gets locked up 5 years in jail. Then he has 3 years supervision and a $250,000 fine on top of this. Like, come on, man. This is complete bullshit. No one should be putting up with these people in power. I mean, there should be a movement to like format this fucking garbage once and for all.
I completely agree with everything you just said. And here's what I think. This is maybe my prediction, is that we're not going to see a pardon. And the reason is, I think Ross, interestingly enough, he was like an easy political victory for Trump to pardon. There was limited downside. I think that the implications of the tools and the work that Samurai was doing is far too devastating to the state for them to override something like this. They want these sorts of people locked up. They want to make a statement about, you know, you need to tread lightly or else this is what could happen, because there was no money laundering. They were never touching the coins. They completely had to redefine the law, which was a bullshit law anyway, just to make this case. But Sophie, I'd love to hear your response as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, privacy is upstream from self-custody. And the fact that a lot of people didn't really know what was going on in the public about Samurai Wallet kind of, you know, they lose political leverage. And that's where you really see the administration's and even though they're separate, right? Like, this is the judicial branch. I'm not going to say like, oh, it's Trump's fault. But the fact that there wasn't like so much noise about it just means that like there's no political capital behind it and there likely won't be a pardon. There's also a lot of people that, you know, I've heard online saying this guy was begging, you know, criminals to use his software. And it's like, who cares? He's not the one who committed the crimes. You cannot set a precedent where you are going to jail or you're going to incriminate people for writing code, essentially. So, you know, it starts with privacy. And then the fact that governments and institutions and banks are starting to show great interest in Bitcoin just tells me that the next possible victim of their tyranny is self-custody. So we have to be very careful.
Yes, completely agree. And very sad. We need to keep fighting for these guys, though, to the extent that we can, you know, make some waves and bring this to the attention of people who can affect change. I think we need to. I'm not optimistic about what that would look like, but it doesn't mean we don't fight for it, just the way we do for everything else in Bitcoin. All righty, guys. Up next, Tony, your man Sonny tweeted this out. So centralized entities and miners collectively hold about 8.7 million BTC. Centralized exchanges recorded a net inflow of 3,900 BTC over the last 24 hours, increasing the total to about 3.2 million. So we're seeing a large centralization of coins at centralized entities. And Sophie, you had a comment on the miners is a potentially bullish marker. I would love to hear that thesis. And then Tony, we can talk about what this means for self-custody.
Okay, so full disclosure, I ChatGPT'd this because I don't know that much about mining or, you know, really what this tweet meant. So I wanted to understand a little bit more. And one of the points that I looked up is that miners holding instead of selling is particularly bullish because usually they have to sell to cover their costs. And so what that means to me is that they expect the Bitcoin price to go up. I don't know how true that is because I think we've all been wrong about the price, this entire, cycle, but, that could be one point of view. But the other about centralization is, you know, it seems like the minute that institutions, entered Bitcoin, retail kind of got scared away, and that scares me also because I, you know, Bitcoin is supposed to be for everyone. Bitcoin is supposed to be peer-to-peer. It's not supposed to be held by one central entity. So on one hand, while it could be good that the price goes up, what use is it if we fall into the same trap where one central entity or a couple of people, very powerful people in the world, control the supply?
Yeah, I think that's well said. Tony, what's your take on, especially I think seeing the exchanges, the inflows there?
This is very depressing, man. I mean, to me, this is like we're living, you know, on a planet of the retards here when you see numbers like this on the screen. Like who in their right mind gives up, you know, the world's scarcest asset, you know, to institutions? Like how stupid do you have to be in order not to understand what it is that you're holding in order to have them, you know, scare the living daylights out of you? Or worse, you give in to your laziness in order to think that someone is smarter or better than you to custody your money. Like, haven't you learned anything from, you know, the 2008 collapse or, you know, past histories when all of these centralized institutions failed or worse, they get confiscated? Like, I mean, do people have like pigeon brains, like, you know, in like instilled in their DNA? Is that like the mass common denominator of folks out there? It's mind boggling to me how this is not more obvious. And when people willingly, you know, give away something that's supposed to be like the ninth or 10th wonder of the world, like it blows my mind, like how, like it almost feels like we're not human because we understand this and we're just like polluted by like a planet of monkeys, you know, that understand absolutely nothing. But that also goes to show how strong the PSYOP was for like such a long time, where people just don't think, most people are incapable of critical thinking. This is the only rationale I have to explain such moronic behavior. Like, you have a scarce asset, 21 million. You own it for the first time in your life. You can actually own money. You've never been able to do this before. And you give it up for what? For worthless paper because it shows a big number on a screen? Like, come on, man. There's supposed to be like half a gram of common sense in every living being. But when I see numbers like this, it's utterly depressing. The silver lining in all of this, though, guys, is that it doesn't take 100% adoption for Bitcoin to win. All we need is enough people that don't fall into this stupidity to hold Bitcoin in self-custody. That's how you fight. That's how you win. You don't give in to these stupid narratives. I mean, they've been going on for decades on end. And, you know, rinse and repeat, clown after clown, nothing changes, except for the few that actually pay attention.
Okay, Tony, I've got another comment from Sani, and this time I don't want you to hold back like you... So
like you just said.
So this is a dot ETH handle tweeting this, by the way. So BlackRock dumped $975 million in BTC right after Trump's speech. $3 billion sold in 2 days. They know something we don't. And of course, Sani chimes in, pardon me, sir, investors sold a lot of IBIT shares yesterday and BlackRock is matching what they sold on change. You effing retard. So, Tony, you, I think you like this. Yeah, there's your laughing emoji right below. What was your response to this?
Man, like, if you don't see it, you don't believe it. Like, you can't, you know, you can't fathom how retarded people are. First of all, the dot ETH should have given away that you should just skip over that tweet. You know, you just ignore it entirely. But he's right. You know, BlackRock doesn't know something that we don't. But the investors in BlackRock, you know, part of that, you know, planet of the retards, well, they're selling for whatever, you know, foolish reasoning that they have. And of course, you know, BlackRock has to sell the equivalent amount of Bitcoin to match, you know, whatever IBITs are being dumped. That's all we're seeing here. But the fact that people are dumping Bitcoin because, you know, coincidentally, it's also the most liquid asset that they can, you know, attack, you know, instantly. Well, you know, that's also like something that doesn't play in Bitcoin's favor. As much as it does good, it also does bad because of, you know, its liquidity. But the fact that people want to get rid of it, that is, you know, Guinness World Record, you know, stupidity as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, it's psychological warfare, right? And it's also taking advantage of the fact that most people, you know, they don't know anything about money or finances. Our educational system in the United States makes it so that you don't ask any questions about our money, about the way that the economy is set up. And they make it so that you're a good little boy and you follow the rules and you just want to make enough money to, like, you know, support your friend, your family and your kids, and they want you to be beneath them, and that is by design. And so then come the institutions and they buy all of this Bitcoin and they shake people who I don't even like calling it weak hands, but people who are desperate, who have been through the 2008 financial crisis, who don't even really understand how it is that it happened, but they understand the pain that they felt, right? And they're feeling that same pain now. And when what happens when you put someone against the wall? They're going to eventually capitulate. And I think that that's what's happening now. BlackRock, the government, whoever you want to call it, all of these powerful people on earth, they are using their power to psychologically declare war on young people, especially by making it so that they have to sell their Bitcoin, not because they want to, but because they need to survive, because the economy is really, really bad right now. And it's like, it's exactly what you're saying, Tony. And I completely agree with you. I just also see the other side of, you know, people who are suffering and they need to, like, they don't understand. They don't understand the full power of Bitcoin and how this could help their lives in the long run, because they're just trying to survive day to day, because it's a problem that these people started in the first place.
No, you're absolutely right, Sophie. But here's what I'll say on this. When they destroyed my life, or at least tried to destroy my life, I had nothing. Okay, so it's not like I was put in a difficult position. I was put in hell, you know, incarnate with absolutely nothing, flatlined to zero. that pain is what pushed me to find out why this happened and, you know, who was behind it. That curiosity is what has me sitting here right now on this podcast, having these conversations, co-founding the Bitcoin Way and educating folks on this. This anger behind the truth that was finally discovered is what motivates me to do this. The problem I have with financially privileged people is that they don't take the time to think. They assume this is never going to happen to them, even though they get screwed over and over again, you know, like situation after situation. We had 2008 that wrecked God knows how many people.
The imminent crash. And that's by design. It's by design.
Of course.
Why do you think we're so addicted to social media, and why we're so addicted to the conveniences of life? It's all by design. If we were, you know, made to go live in the desert, we would have to figure it out. We would have to, we would be brought to a point of pain that we would have to figure it out. And unfortunately, and I say this all the time on Simply Bitcoin, I think that that's what it's going to take, unfortunately. It's going to take someone just, people feeling that level of pain so that they discover the truth and feel the anger that you're feeling, because that's what happened to me. I had to, get out of my bubble in the United States and figure out what it was like living in another country just to figure out what the banking system was really like and how privileged I was in the United States, and that was a big part of what led me to Bitcoin. So, I completely agree with you.
Well said. I think for anyone who's maybe not following along, what you need to understand with the ETFs is that these are individuals who are dumping the ETFs and BlackRock just selling the Bitcoin, in a corresponding manner. So it's not BlackRock learns something and they dump Bitcoin. These are individual investors who are making these decisions. And I think when you made the point, individual investors are scared and they see Bitcoin's price dumping, and so they pile onto that. And it's just a fundamental, if you're in the ETFs, it's probably because you have a fundamental misunderstanding of what is wrong and what the problem is that we're trying to fix with Bitcoin. But anyway, let's continue here. So public company Robinhood is considering adding Bitcoin to its corporate treasury. I wonder if they are going to fix the buy button when Bitcoin is pumping, now that they are considering a corporate treasury, or if that'll continue to malfunction. Sophie, what do you think about this? Exciting? Do you care?
I mean, good for Robinhood, I guess. Good for Robinhood. I mean, I feel like they're kind of late to the party. No, but really, I feel like the treasury move is like this cycle's, altcoin sort of phase. Like, it's like the new IPO. It's the new, look at what my company is doing, the ICO, the cycles past. I think the only company that is really, there are a few that are going to benefit from having a Bitcoin strategic reserve. I think Robinhood is a little bit late to the party, but I mean, they are buying cheap sats. So if there was ever a time to do this, it would be now. But we all know who the number one is in this space, and that's Strategy. So, good for them. But I think that at the end of the day, it's always better when individuals hold Bitcoin. So they better fix that buy button.
Yes. What I would add to this is, anytime someone announces that they're going to adopt a Bitcoin treasury, I think that's awesome. Where I tend to have an issue is when they start shilling fiat products by virtue of having their Bitcoin treasury, that I'm like, you missed it. Like, do the same thing I'm doing as an individual, accumulate Bitcoin, take it in self-custody, and see your world improve and see your balance sheet improve and your ability to buy new inventory or expand your operations or whatever improve. You don't need to have a potential rug pull scenario for retail to benefit from a Bitcoin treasury. I think every company should have a Bitcoin treasury. It's not having a treasury that's the problem. It's the fiat products built and the hopium, marketed around what a Bitcoin treasury company is.
Yes, Ari. Well said.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I've never been a fan of these Bitcoin treasuries. I also echo the sentiment that these are the shitcoins of this cycle. I mean, there's only one that, discovered the loophole, and that's Michael Saylor. The first mover advantage, he definitely has it, good on him. He was the brains behind, this whole operation. He deserves whatever, benefits that he reaps. all these copycats, you know, that are just using Bitcoin for a buzzword, you know, most of the time, these are completely worthless. I mean, these are like zombie companies that don't offer any value as far as I'm concerned. They absolutely don't understand Bitcoin or stand or represent anything around sovereignty or freedom. They will bail and sell instantly at the first glimpse of something going a little bit shaky. The problem is that a lot of retail unknowingly buys this garbage thinking it's going to outperform Bitcoin rather than going to the asset themselves and learning a few steps to master self-custody. That's my problem with them. But again, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Sophie, people are going to have to get wrecked to learn. And, you know, when I see folks FOMOing into stuff like this, to me, it tells me that, you know, they haven't learned anything. They're just rinse and repeat, you know, like a little parrot that echoes the mistakes of the past. It just repeats them over and over. So good on Robinhood. You know, maybe it benefits them somehow. But for anyone thinking that they're going to invest in any of Robinhood's, you know, TradFi products using Bitcoin, stay away. This is not for you.
Well said. All righty. Another update to her Bitcoin target price prediction. Kathy Wood says in 2030, instead of $1.5 million, she thinks it's going to be worth $1.2 million. I feel like it's every couple of months I see an updated price prediction. I'm not sure what they're changing in their Excel spreadsheet to come to this, but I'm sure it's some sort of wizardry I could just never understand. Tony, how do you feel about this price prediction and price predictions in general?
Hold on, man. Let me check my crystal ball here and let me spin it around a few times to see what number it lands. Boom. I think it's going to land on 2 million by 2030.
Okay.
Because why not? Because why not?
This is my quant, everyone. So, Sophie, do you have anything maybe a little bit more insightful to share?
I mean, 1.5, 1.2, who cares? That's all the way in 2030. Like, by then, we'll all be happy. But the reality is, nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows what's going on. And if they tell you they know what's going on, they're lying to you. Or they're just, like, sniffing way too much of their own hopium. The reality is, this cycle has not gone the way anybody has expected. We've had all of the positive news that we could possibly ask for. And, you know, it has not gone our way. So I think, you know, it's great, Kathy Wood. Like, maybe we'll care about this prediction in 2030 when we finally hit $1 million Bitcoin. But at that point, like, honestly, I just don't think anyone's going to really care about that type of prediction because we'll all be happy and hopefully rich.
I think the prediction we should be making is how many new anarcho-capitalists can we have converted by 2030? Because I think that's a much higher likelihood that we end central banking if we can see that number increase.
She sounds like the female version of Jim Cramer, you know, considering considering how many times she's been wrong about all of her predictions.
Have you guys seen the inverse Cramer? The inverse Cramer index has outperformed Nancy Pelosi this year, which is, I mean, just like, it's like 56% to like 47% or something.
How does this man have a job still?
Well, I think it's because you enjoy him yelling and then you do the opposite. And so it's actually very, very effective if you know how to read the cues.
It's an entertainment channel.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's nothing more than entertainment. Alrighty, so Bitcoin is currently underperforming the S&P 500 year to date. So Bitcoin's at about 7.28%. The S&P 500 is 14.5%. I think this is the challenge. When you look at Kathy Wood, when you look at metrics like this, this is what people are getting bogged down by. They still view Bitcoin as an investment. They don't understand the implications of Bitcoin winning and what that accomplishes for the world. And ultimately, if it does what we believe it's going to do, the comparing year-to-date returns is completely irrelevant in my view. If you look over a long enough time horizon, zoom out, not just historically speaking, what the quote-unquote returns have been, but what we anticipate in terms of ending central banking and having a fixed money to measure value in the world, I think that's what we need to be looking at. That I'll get off my soapbox. Sophie, do you look at these metrics at all? I mean, what would you say to anyone who is still analyzing Bitcoin as an investment and looking at a number like this?
I would ask them to change their life and stop looking at things short term because it hasn't worked out for them I mean, if you look at Bitcoin in the long run, it's outperformed every single asset in the last 15, 17 years. So you gotta, you know, you kind of gotta like look away. And again, it's a symptom. It's a symptom for especially my generation, because I talk to a lot of people, you know, my age who are in finance and traditional finance. They trade stocks, they're finance bros, and they, you know, they talk and they say, oh, but like Bitcoin, it's volatile, whatever. And it's a symptom of our generation just being addicted to short-term gains, right? So looking at it year to date, they feel like it's a really long time, but, you know, they don't realize life is really long. And it's a generation that has suffered through the 2008 financial crisis, 9/11, you know, a bunch of political unrest. And, you know, to us, it's a big deal. I think in the grand scheme of things, we've still been, you know, the most privileged generation and group of people in the face of the earth, but it's a perception, right? So I think that that's just a symptom. And it either means that the S&P 500 is about to implode, because it has been riding a very high wave since Trump took office. And even my dad, who, you know, he loves to trade stocks, he's like, the market's been way too high, something's got to give at some point, like I just don't know when the other shoe is going to drop. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, thank God I got him into Bitcoin. And yeah, I just think that at some point something's going to give, and all of these people are going to look really stupid for thinking that, you know, oh, we beat you guys year to date. Like, who cares? What about 2 years from now? What about 4 years from now? What about like 10 years from now? Are you even thinking that far ahead? Most people aren't, because they're just trying to survive.
Yeah, Peter Schiff syndrome here, just on a different asset class. Tony, would you add anything to that?
No, man, I'm already living in the future. These numbers mean absolutely nothing to me. Far as I'm concerned, Bitcoin is always on a bull run. It's never gone down. And anyone measuring it, you know, with worthless toilet paper doesn't understand it yet. So, you know, pick up a few books, watch a few videos, and, you know, recalibrate the way you do math.
If you measure Bitcoin in terms of self-sovereignty, you are always in a bull market. Alrighty, last one here, guys. So Redbox Global tweeted, Fed's Williams, Fed may soon need to expand balance sheet for liquidity needs. And Larry Lepard said, no shit. And I commented, someone should come up with a name for this event, obviously alluding to the big print. So if you do need some bullish news for Bitcoin, if you just have to see that number go up, I think we're going to see a major expansion in the Fed's balance sheet in the coming months, years, certainly. Sophie, would you agree?
You know, I fear that even while, you know, with money printing, we still won't know exactly what will happen, because we just printed money on October 29th and the price is just dumped. So I don't know. I think, you know, obviously with printing money, things are going to become more expensive. And if the price of Bitcoin doesn't like start to pump, then that's just going to be doubly bad for me, because I don't have cash and I have a lot of Bitcoin, and it's not, you know, equating, but, you know, let's see what happens. I don't know. I honestly don't know at this point. The Bitcoin price has traditionally followed the M2 money supply, but this year again, this cycle just feels like it's been different. However, you know, since the most amount of money we've printed is like, you know, since 2020, and we have pumped a great deal since then. We've also gone down a great deal since then. So again, like, I just don't know what the cycles really mean at this point. Yesterday on the show, we covered actually the power law, which I never really understood, but Nico explained to me that part of the power law is that it takes twice as much time for the price of Bitcoin to double. So, you know, maybe that's where, you know, that is the true cycle. That is like really the nature of Bitcoin. I don't know. It's hard to be speculative these days.
Yeah. I think there's a lag effect on the money printing and inflation, and it's probably the same with, you know, these assets as well. And so it took, what, a couple of years of the COVID money printing to show up at the grocery store at 9% or whatever it ended up being. Well, official numbers, much higher, obviously, in reality. I think it's coming. I think it is going to impact Bitcoin's price, but I also don't care when or how much. It's, you know, again, focus on self-sovereignty, the things you can control, not what the Fed's doing.
Tony. And building.
Yeah. But
the building aspect is important, because if you're just sitting around waiting for number to go up, it's like you're kind of wasting your life. There's so much more to number to life than number go up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really important point. If you have the resources to start a podcast, start a newsletter, do it. If you are a developer, go build something or join a team that's already building something and contribute. If you don't have any of those skills or that sort of bandwidth, go orange pill your friends and family, you know, give some books out. I mean,
start a family.
Or yeah, go start a family. Yes. Very good advice. Tony.
Yeah. The only way Bitcoin loses is if good people do nothing. But I don't see that. I don't see that happening. I mean, the planet is bankrupt. Okay, all governments are completely, you know, out of the game. We're witnessing the collapse now, and the biggest global reserve, you know, is going to lead that collapse. I mean, right now they're printing what, $7 trillion every what, 60 or 70 days, if my math is correct. I mean, how long do you think it's going to take before this number gets reduced to every, I don't know, 20 days?
Yeah.
You know, yes. So all it takes is for one event, and it doesn't even have to be a sophisticated one, one stupid event to break somewhere. And all of these metrics, all of these power laws, all of these charts and numbers, all of this goes to shit. Because when something breaks bad and fast enough, you don't know how things are going to play out. You know, so I'd be terrified as an individual today if I wasn't aware of the existence of a life raft like Bitcoin. I mean, you'd say ignorance is bliss, maybe, but you know, you're still not immune to the repercussions of that ignorance. And at this point, for anyone paying, you know, 30 seconds attention, it is extremely terrifying what is about to happen, you know, when the collapse actually takes place. Like, if you thought 2008 was bad, like, this is like a million times worse. And I'm like trying to be calm about this. I don't know, man. It's for me, it's very, you know, worrisome that not more people are, you know, reactive in the way they should be. It's not happy-go-lucky anymore. That doesn't work. Not at the stage that we're at now in the world.
Yeah. Good words of caution. I think great place to end. Sophie, thank you as always for joining us. We have a blast when you get to come on. You want to tell people where they can find you, follow you, learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys can follow me at Internet Sophie. That's S-O-P-H-I, no E, on X. And you guys can follow us on the Simply Bitcoin channel. I have a new show called Satoshi. It comes out Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I cover all things, you know, news related to Bitcoin. So follow us there.
Perfect. I love it. Tony, thanks for joining as always. Look forward to having you again sometime soon. Sophie, you guys take care.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to the bitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want to back up in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.